So here we are, kill 60 million babies, homosexuals praying at the inauguration. I think the process of mercy looks like probably car bombs in Los Angeles and Washington, D.C. and Des Moines, Iowa.
You have that right to traditional values.
Segregation forever.
When I met her, I hadn't told anybody. In fact, I was meeting her really to sort of see, am I gay? Is this actually really what I crave and I want? But of course, when I fell madly in love and I realized it was, I didn't quite know how best to handle it.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. A Grammy honoree goes on the record against Brunei barbarism. Political weather rains on a Republican hate-hosted trip to Israel. And a British evangelical comes out accepting. Those stories and a lot more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Chris Ann Eastwood.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBT communities around the world for the week ending February 7th, 2015. Brunei, the tiny Southeast Asian nation whose horrific new laws punish private, consensual adult gay sex with up to death by stoning, is back in the news this week. A pre-Grammys party to honor multi-talented singer-songwriter John Legend went on as scheduled on February 5th, but without the honoree. The magazine LA Confidential wanted to toast its December-January cover man in the Crystal Ballroom of the Beverly Hills Hotel, but that's one of several upscale properties around the world owned by Brunei's autocratic Sultan Hassanal Bolkiah. In a statement emailed to several media outlets, Legend spokeswoman Amanda Silverman said that he would not be attending the LA Confidential party at the Beverly Hills Hotel in light of the horrific anti-women and anti-LGBT policies approved by the hotel's owner, the Sultan of Brunei. These policies, which, among other things, could permit women and LGBT Bruneians to be stoned to death, are heinous, and John does not in any way wish to further enrich the Sultan while he continues to enforce these brutal laws. A statement issued to The Hollywood Reporter by LA Confidential spokeswoman Allison Miller seemingly tried to have it both ways. Los Angeles Confidential magazine is an avid supporter of equal rights for all people, it read. Our decision to hold our event at the hotel in no way suggests that we support any anti-human rights policies. Protesters outside the hotel urged partygoers to join Legend's boycott.
This is not the first high-profile boycott of Sultan's hotels. BET News reported that Babyface moved his wedding last year from the Bel Air Hotel, which is also owned by the Sultan. A continuing boycott of the Sultan's hotels is supported by mainstream media stars including Oprah Winfrey, Ellen DeGeneres, Sharon Osbourne, and Jay Leno. There have also been protests outside some of the Sultan's other properties in London, Paris, Geneva, Milan, and Rome. More than 100 members of the U.S. Congress have urged President Obama to raise the issue of Brunei's poor human rights record during trade talks with the Sultan's representatives and those of nine other countries in meetings for the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which, if signed by all parties, would be the largest such trade pact in history. The White House announced in December that it had suspended the Gambia's eligibility for trade benefits under the African Growth and Opportunities Act in response to that country's ongoing persecution of its LGBT citizens. Equality advocates are urging Obama to take a similarly tough stance against Brunei.
But they're applauding the president for including in his $4 trillion 2016 budget a proposed amendment to the Social Security Act to make spousal benefits available to all legally married same-gender couples, even if they live in U.S. states that don't recognize their marriages. Social Security benefits are only available now to married lesbian and gay couples living in states that recognize the unions. However, such an amendment to the Social Security Act would need the approval of the Republican-led Congress. The party is, at best, seriously divided on the issue of marriage equality. There's also no telling how the International Human Rights Defense Act will fare. It was introduced in both chambers this week to promote the rights of LGBT people around the world by Senator Edward Markey of Massachusetts and Representative Alan Lowenthal of California, both Democrats.
Michigan's Republican Governor Rick Snyder announced this week that the state will recognize the legally performed marriages of about 300 gay and lesbian couples who got hitched late last year in the short window between a district court ruling overturning the state's civil marriage ban and a federal appeals court putting the ruling on hold. U.S. District Judge Mark Goldsmith ordered Michigan to recognize those marriages in January. The governor said this week that he would not appeal that ruling, noting that Michigan is among the four state bans that will be reviewed later this year by the U.S. Supreme Court.
Most Alabama media sources predicted that the civil marriages of same-gender couples would begin on February 9th. That's when the stay of a federal court ruling striking down that state's civil marriage ban was set to expire, unless the U.S. Supreme Court decided to extend it. The high court refused to do so in a similar case involving Florida's ban, clearing the way for lesbian and gay couples to begin tying the knot in the Sunshine State. Alabama was expected to become the 37th U.S. state, plus the District of Columbia, to issue civil marriage licenses to same-gender couples.
In Colorado, Denver Mayor Michael Hancock canceled his scheduled appearance at the National LGBTQ Task Force's annual Creating Change Conference after more than 100 activists stormed the stage to protest a recent Denver police shooting that killed a transgender Latina teenager. Hancock had been scheduled to address the conference that evening. Jesse Hernandez was shot on January 26th by Denver police officers as they attempted to arrest and charge her with driving a stolen vehicle. One officer reportedly fractured his leg during a confrontation with Hernandez that led to he and another officer opening fire and killing the teen. Some witnesses dispute police accounts of the circumstances that led up to the shooting. After task force speakers acknowledged the protesters and their issues, the evening continued with a scheduled discussion on police brutality and the racially charged actions that followed the death of 18-year-old Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. The 27th annual Creating Change Conference, held this year in downtown Denver, attracted some 4,000 participants involved in LGBT politics, media, and activism. The gathering was scheduled to wrap up on February 8th.
Elsewhere, Anise Parker, the out mayor of Houston, Texas, has been named America's best mayor and one of the 10 best mayors on earth by an international think tank known as the City Mayors Foundation. It ranks city leaders based on achievements, feedback from citizens, and overall public support. Along with her human rights advocacy, the jury praised Parker for policies that enabled the city to remain fiscally healthy during the worst of the recent recession, setting the stage for the tremendous economic growth Houston enjoys today. Parker, who married her wife last year after an extended courtship, called being Houston's mayor the best political job in the world, adding that it's a great honor to be recognized for doing what I love for a city that I dearly love.
And California lawmakers are pushing for a statue in the U.S. Capitol to honor the first American woman in space, Sally Ride, who posthumously came out as lesbian in the obituary she approved before her death from pancreatic cancer in 2012. The National Statuary Hall Collection, created by Congress in 1864, allows each state to provide two statues of notable citizens for display in the Capitol. The two statues currently representing California are President Ronald Reagan and Father Junipero Serra, the controversial Spanish preacher who founded several missions in the state, but has in more recent years been revealed as an oppressor of Native populations. The legislation authored by State Senator Ricardo Lara and out Assembly Speaker Tony Atkins proposes to make room in the National Statuary Hall for California native Sally Ride by relocating the statue of Father Serra to a place in California where people can be reminded of his significant historical impact on the Golden State. Ride's longtime partner, Tam O'Shaughnessy, continues the late space pioneer's legacy as CEO of Sally Ride Science, which he co-founded with Ride in 2001 to create classroom materials and professional development courses for 3rd through 8th grade educators and their students. The programs place a strong emphasis on gender and racial equality in the classroom and on introducing students to working scientists, engineers, and mathematicians who exemplify that diversity in their respective fields.
And finally, Michael O'Leary from Cork spoke passionately this week on TV3 Ireland's The People's Debate with Vincent Brown against May's civil marriage equality referendum. Most voters are expected to support it. Laughingstock is defined as a person subjected to general mockery or ridicule. Mr. O'Leary learned that the hard way this week after his befuddled rant went viral.
Isn't this a corrupt way for politicians to come out and say they are in favour of gay marriages, and we have family values, and no politician or party should be coming out calling for a yes vote. I say shame on you. We want family values, and we don't want to see men and women getting married. And that's the holy of it. Don't want to see two women getting married. We want to respect our family values. Get on, you pack of corruption! Get on, you pure corruption!
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
That's News Wrap for the week ending February 7th, 2015. Produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Chris Ann Eastwood.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
Out singer-songwriter Sam Smith took home four of the Grammy Awards' biggest honors on February 8th in Los Angeles. Best New Artist, Best Pop Vocal Album for In the Lonely Hour, plus Song of the Year and Record of the Year for...
I just want to say that before I made this record, I was doing everything to try and get my music heard. I tried to lose weight and make I was making awful music, and it was only until I started to be myself that the music started to flow and people started to listen. So thank you guys for accepting me to be just me. Thank you. I want to thank the man who this record is about, who I fell in love with last year. Thank you so much for breaking my heart because you got me four Grammys.
A reporter later asked Smith what could be better than winning a Grammy. His answer? A boyfriend. Coming up, more progress, politics, and religion, starting with the grand old update as MSNBC News anchor and super sleuth Rachel Maddow continues to follow the trail of roaming Republicans.
We are calling.
We've been looking for him for days. Reince Priebus, chairman of the National Republican Party, attended the Senate Republican lunch yesterday in Washington. And that isn't a weird thing for him to do as Republican Party chairman, but it is weird, or at least unexpected, that he was in D.C. at all.
So here we are, kill 60 million babies, red ink as far as the eye can see, homosexuals praying at the inauguration. If America gets mercy... I believe this doesn't sound good. I think the process of mercy looks like probably car bombs in Los Angeles and Washington, D.C. and Des Moines, Iowa. I think if we get mercy, the process is going to be a very painful process.
That's David Lane. He works for part of a far-right religious group called the American Family Association. In December, Time was first to report that Reince Priebus, chairman of the National Republican Party, invited the 168 members of the RNC to go on a 9-day trip to Israel, paid for by the American Family Association and led by that guy, David Lane. This trip was free to them, all expenses paid. So it basically amounts to an in-kind donation of several hundred thousand dollars to the National Republican Party from the American Family Association. People for the American Way and Southern Poverty Law Center and groups like that have done exhaustive work cataloging exactly who this group is. They're pretty notorious, even within Republican politics. After they and David Lane specifically joined other far-right activists in 2012 saying Mitt Romney shouldn't be the Republican nominee for president because he worships a false god. But Reince Priebus apparently took hundreds of thousands of dollars from them, made this arrangement where the guy who said he wouldn't vote for Mitt Romney because of his religion would nevertheless be hosting this big trip for the National Republican Party. Time magazine and Haaretz in Israel reported that a third of the members of the RNC said yes to go on the trip, and Reince Priebus himself would also be going on this trip with the American Family Association and David Lane. After the trip started getting reported more widely, there was an announcement of the American Family Association distancing themselves from their most inflammatory spokesman, Brian Fisher. Still does his radio show for them, but after years of earning them terrible press, they finally demoted him within the organization right before this trip with the RNC.
You literally are staring into virtually the unvarnished energy of Satan himself when you come up against the forces that are pushing the homosexual agenda forward. They are jackbooted, homo fascist thugs who want to use the tyrannical and totalitarian power of the state to send men of faith to jail. And that frankly sounds a lot more like Nazi Germany than the United States of America.
The story started getting more and more press. Conservative Jewish group, the Anti-Defamation League, called on the RNC to not go. National Jewish Democratic Council did the same thing. The story got covered in Politico, Jewish Daily Forward. And now the RNC is getting weird. First, we asked the RNC if they had anything to do with Brian Fisher getting fired right before the RNC took its trip with this group. No answer for them on that. We asked the RNC if Reince Priebus was still planning on going on the trip, as had previously been reported. No answer from them on that. We asked the RNC if the trip itself was still on, if they're still planning on going. No answer from them on that. That seemed weird. So then we called back the American Family Association to see if they'd tell us if the trip was still on. Their lawyer told us on Monday, "I don't know that." That was literally his quotes. 3 days into the trip, they're paying for and leading, and their line was they had no idea if it was happening. And now, as we've continued to badger the RNC to find out if Reince Priebus followed through and actually went to Israel with this organization that says Jewish immigrants to this country should be forced to convert to Christianity, Jews have no First Amendment right to practice their religion in this country. After refusing to say if Reince Priebus was really going through with a Republican Party trip to Israel led by the guy who says America was founded to advance the Christian faith and he couldn't vote for a Mormon like Mitt Romney, after dodging those questions for more than a week now, there was Reince Priebus yesterday, not in Israel, but in Washington, D.C. Apparently, the RNC caved. And they couldn't take the heat, and they're hoping if they refuse all comment about it, no one will notice. Mr. Chairman, we noticed. Don't know why you say goodbye.
Beware Republicans, you can run, but you can never hide from MSNBC's Rachel Maddow. The new occupant of Stephen Colbert's Comedy Central time slot handed it to some good old boys this week. Larry Wilmore of The Nightly Show marveled at the mad pace of the Marriage Equality March.
We're only a month into 2015, and already it's a great year for gay marriage.
A federal judge overturned South Dakota's constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage.
Nice, South Dakota. Well, the guys in Mount Rushmore can finally make it official. That Teddy is a bear, that's for sure, right? But you know what, to be honest, I've been so involved with my blackety black black stuff, you know, I've just been slacking on my gay, I'm sorry. I really hadn't been paying attention to the LGBT struggle, my bad. All right, so gay marriage is now legal in 36 states. Pretty amazing. Wow. That is pretty good. I am really happy for you gay people, but I gotta say, it's a little fast, man. I mean, no, I'm not hating, but maybe I'm just a little jealous, you know? No, because black people spent hundreds of years fighting for every single civil right. It's true. I mean, for example, we've only just gotten to the whole please don't shoot us thing, you know? So, and now, look, I know you guys have had it really hard, too, all right? But, I mean, come on, you got your first gay marriage date in 2004, and 11 years later, you're pretty much done. Whew.
Texas representative has filed a controversial bill to prevent county clerks from issuing same-sex marriage licenses. In fact, the bill would discontinue the salary of state or local government employees who issue marriage licenses to gay couples.
Let me see if I understand this. You want something illegal to be the law to prevent something legal because you don't like that it's the law? Man, that's some typical Texas diabolical hickory smoke brain barbecue.
You have that right to traditional values.
When Southerners start waxing nostalgic about bringing back traditional values, I'm just a little slow to get on that train. Or let's say boat, okay? What about more progressive states like Alabama?
Alabama Chief Justice Roy Moore sent a letter to Governor Robert Bentley saying probate judges can defy a federal judge's ruling that found the state's ban on gay marriage unconstitutional.
Moore says he expects to uphold Alabama's ban on same-sex marriage whether or not the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals agrees.
I'm Judge Roy Moore, and I ain't listening to no other judge. No Supreme Court judge, no Judge Judy, no Judge Reinhold, no Judge Dredd, no mock judge, no Judge Leshy B. Judge Screwball.
Here's the good news, gay marriage movement, GMM. It's just a matter of time. For example, it didn't get more racist than Alabama Governor George Wallace.
And I say segregation now, segregation tomorrow, and segregation forever.
I mean, this guy who couldn't have been more against integration eventually realized he was on the wrong side of history.
One time we believed in segregation, but that was wrong. You shouldn't segregate American citizens from one another. Race, color, religion, and national origin.
Thanks to the nightly show's Larry Wilmore for reminding us that time wounds all heals. British evangelical Christians got a big surprise this week when one of their best known came out as lesbian. In an interview with Ruth Gledhill for Christian Today, former member of the Church of England's Archbishop's Council, Jane Ozan, shared the story of her journey from the closet to her new job as director of the LGBT lobbying group Accepting Evangelicals.
I was appointed to the Archbishop's Council in 1999 as someone who'd had no previous experience with the Church of England hierarchical structures, but who was very, very active in my own very young, lively evangelical church in South London, in St Paul's Onslow Square. And through a whole very unusual set of circumstances, I found myself brought on board this group of 19. And yes, I had strategic consultancy skills and I was a media consultant, I'd been at the BBC, but really I was female, I was young, i.e. I was under 50, and I wasn't ordained. And I realised that I, in a sense, could act as a court jester, someone who could speak truth to power, who could point out that our churches were losing young people, that our buildings were falling down, that our clergy were really struggling, and that we really needed to get down on our knees and ask God for his help.
Jane, when you were on the council, you were really at the heart of the church's government and perceived by people like me as one of the most powerful people in the church. When did you leave the council and why?
Well, I was originally asked to do 3 years, a term of 3 years, and then I was asked if I'd stay on for another 3 years, and that took me to the end of 2004. And I actually felt that I'd done what I'd been called to do, and more importantly, I was actually becoming part of the institution. And that meant that I didn't have the prophetic voice that I felt I could have. I would frequently go up for prayer at church, quite normal at the end of a service, asking for prayer. And it's quite difficult because you have to always sort of explain what you want prayer for. And the constant feeling I had was being prayed for and them trying to cast something out of me. It was like casting myself out of myself. Nothing was going to budge and people would give up and not quite sure what to do. And I'd be left feeling really awful and bad and that there was something wrong with me. And basically what happened was I fell madly in love and I started a relationship with a wonderful woman who I was with for 6 years, and I personally would have loved to have been with much longer than that.
So is that your first relationship?
First proper major long-term relationship, and to be fair, 6 years is quite good talking to many of my friends because there's an awful lot of baggage that you need to work through, especially in your 40s and you've never had a relationship with someone before. But I believe that was God-given in so many ways, and I think what so many people saw was the transformation in me, about me becoming fully alive, fully myself, fully at peace. But the truth is, when I met her, I hadn't told anybody. I mean, no one. In fact, I was meeting her really to sort of see, am I gay? Is this actually really what I crave and I want? But of course, when I fell madly in love and I realised it was, I didn't quite know how best to handle it. And I actually went to go and see a senior bishop who'd been a very dear friend of mine on the Archbishop's Council, who had been making himself comments about how evangelicals needed to be more grey and less black and white on this issue. And he very graciously agreed to see me and was so supportive. And he suggested that actually it would be best for me to write my own story and the reasons for my decisions and to take charge of that and to send it to the key people I'd been very engaged with, so my friends on the Archbishop's Council, senior evangelical leaders across the church. And I did that, asking them to keep that private and confidential. And I think the general feeling was, because I had removed myself from public life, I was not involved in the church in any way, people respected that decision.
But you're moving back into public life and into the church, hence talking to me and coming out publicly for the first time. So what is happening now? Why this development?
September, just after Vicky Beeching came out, I've been praying about when would be the right time for me to engage. I always felt it would be right for me to re-engage at some point, but I knew that I'd know when. And it suddenly felt that I actually needed to start meeting some people, but I didn't know who. You need to understand, I also thought I was the only gay evangelical woman probably in the world, which is terrible, but I was that cut off. I'd lost most of my friends and a lot of close colleagues. I didn't know who to talk to. And when I read Vicky's story and realised that she'd found quite a lot of counsel and comfort in Ruth Hunt, the head of Stonewall, I rang Ruth and asked if I could go and speak to her. And suddenly I found myself meeting all sorts of key individuals within this part of the church, not least accepting evangelicals who embraced me with open arms, helped me meet many other evangelical gay Christians. Let's be honest, it's the evangelical church, more than anyone, who need to learn how to hear and embrace each other.
As head of accepting evangelicals, going to be advocating for this change, which some people feel is overdue in the evangelical movement, but others are still very much of the position that this is not a good thing.
One thing I've noticed with the letters that I had from people who are strongly opposed to the decision I've made, one thing that's been really key to do is to outline how much they still love me and how much they recognise that my faith is important to me. They can't reconcile that, but that to me gives me hope that as long as we can keep talking to each other, that God must have a way through this. It's not about right and wrong, it's about the gospel of Christ. And for me, this whole issue, frankly, is about understanding Scripture, because I am truly biblically based. But I see in Scripture the nature of Christ, and we have to go right back to what is Scripture for. It's to reveal Christ and reveal the Christ in each other. And it's that that we need to be constantly open to be challenged about.
Wide and strong is God's embrace, out of shame and into grace. Meet the challenge face to face. Come out and go forth. Come out and go forth. Come out and go forth. Come out and go forth.
Church of England evangelical Jane Ozan was interviewed by Ruth Gledhill for Christian Today. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. This week, Chris Ann Eastwood and Michael LeBeau contributed program material, with thanks, as always, to Steve Pride. Art Garfunkel, The Beatles, the Morehouse College Glee Club, and Marcia Stevens performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, and our listener supporters for making this program possible. Visit thiswayout.org for lots of information about the show, social media links, and more. Email twradio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KVSC St. Cloud, Minnesota, 2CCC Gosford, New South Wales, WNJR Washington, Pennsylvania, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned!